Again, and we're officially recording, so this is Jan Blodgett interviewing Shane Alexander Stewart.
Yes,
Sunday, September 25th at Reese Temple Amy Zion Church. So yes. Thank you so much for being part of this program. And let's start just a little bit about you and your family. So tell me about where you're born, who your parents are, who your grandparents are.
I was actually born in Statesville. I don't tell a lot of people that. April 20th, 1986, but I was raised in Mooresville, North Carolina my whole life, with the exception of college. I lived in Cullowhee, and then I moved to Salisbury for my master's, and I moved to Atlanta for my second master's. My family name is Stewart, but my family's makeup is so interesting because we have so many different branches coming in and going out. Like, for instance, me and my brothers, we have three different last names. Because my oldest brother has a different mother than we do, and so his last name is Howard. And me and my younger brother have the same parents, but I have my mother's last name, which is Stewart, and he has my father's last name, which is Cowan. And our family is deeply rooted in this area.
Okay.
Stewarts, Cowans, Baileys, Torrance, Davidson, Alexander, Carson, Allison, Sturgis. Those are all names associated with my family. I mean, those are all names that historically been associated with this area in particular. We mostly have been sharecroppers, Neil King factory workers. I'm actually the first person in my family to go to college.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a big response. It's a big feeling, but it's a lot of responsibility. I'm pretty proud of that fact, taking the family forward.
How long were you in Mooresville?
I lived in Mooresville until I was 18, then I went to college. I can still consider Mooresville home. I moved away to Atlanta for 2 years in 2014 and moved back this past January of 2016. But I've lived here my whole entire life, essentially.
Okay. So where did you go to school in Mooresville? Elementary, junior high, college, or high school?
I went to Parkview Elementary. Mm-hmm. It's like it was so long ago now. But yeah, I went to Parkview Elementary, then Mooresville Middle School. And then Mooresville High School, because now you got like all these different schools there. Yeah. Mooresville, it's like, yeah, intermediate school, you got freshman academy. I was like, we didn't have none of this.
Yeah. But now schools would have already been, how long have they been integrated by the time you got into school?
By the time I got to school, it would have been about 20 years.
Okay.
Mooresville, I think, did a lot of integration in the early 70s, actually. So yeah, it would have been about 20, because I started school in 91.
Okay.
So yeah, about almost 20 years. Okay. But it was still, you could still feel that. It was like there was still this feeling of like, I won't say you weren't welcome, but there was still this tension between the black students and white students in the 90s. Even in elementary school, we knew, all the black kids still play with each other and all the white kids play with each other. And we would play with each other when the teacher would make us. And then we would start seeing we weren't so different. We would start playing with each other. But when we first started school, it's like, okay, all the black kids over here, all the white kids over here, and the one random Latino kid would be right here. Like, I don't know where to go. Then you have two Asian kids, like, well, I guess we're sticking together. And until the teachers forced us all to play together, it was like we still went along those lines of our own segregation.
Did people also live separately? Did you mostly live in different neighborhoods?
In Mooresville, it's long been known there are several areas where African Americans live. One area is called Kings Creek. There's Bell Street. Which is also called Patterson Avenue, West End, Sedgeville, Kelly Street, and then the area I lived in was called Eastern Heights, but everyone called it Hike, because in the Southern dialect, Hike become Hike.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, everyone calls it Hikeville, but actually it's called Eastern Heights, but those are the major areas where black people lived in Mooresville, and then, it was like, it's kind of formed a semicircle, like kind of like a crescent moon around in Mooresville, and then you had all the white state, everywhere else, like Fieldstone, and downtown and now on the lake, but for the most part, all black people lived in those little areas. Now we branched out, but for the most part, growing up, I remember those were the areas where African Americans lived.
Okay, because I know, like, in Davidson, there's the West Side, and in Cornelius, there was Smithville, and Huntsville had Pottsville, so but I realized I didn't know that about Mooresville.
Because I like, and you can tell certain things, like if you go on what we call Bell Street, which consists of Bell Street. I want to say Lee Avenue and Patterson Avenue. If you look at the houses, you can tell those back in the day were where the middle class African Americans lived. But now it's kind of like everybody lives back there now. It's like, I don't want to say it's gone down, but it's like you can see there's a lot of different types of people who live there. Whereas back in the day, it was like, okay, this is where all the professional African Americans lived.
That's interesting to know. So where did you go to church?
Beth Bethesda, Amy Zion in Mooresville.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where we grew up. My family's been going there for several generations. My great-grandmother was on the stewards board, and my grandmother sung in the choir, and my aunt sung in the choir, and it was our family church for a long time. It still is. Mm-hmm. Still is.
So how did you end up at Reese Temple?
The pastor who was here before, Pastor Walls, me and her went to college, went to get our Master's of Divinity together.
Okay.
And me and her became very good friends, and I had actually left a different church that I was attending that was Pentecostal, and I was like, well, I don't really have a church to go to. She's like, well, just come visit.
Yeah.
And I was like, I haven't been to Amy Zion in a long, long time. And so I came here and I fell in love with the church and the people, and it's such a welcoming and loving environment right here. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm surprised that more and more people aren't here, because this is a church where you'll feel loved.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about some of the stories that you heard growing up about this area, about your family, about just what were the rules about where you lived.
Oh Lord, because yes. I know there's a lot of stories I've heard about growing up in the Davidson, Mooresville, I guess you'd say kind of Kannapolis type area, because if you go straight down the way towards where Concord Mills and the Renaissance Festival is, that's where my Highway 73.
Okay.
My family grew up on Highway 73, and my grandmother, my mother's mother, her name was Ophelia Stewart.
Okay.
She was born Ophelia Rice. She tells me a lot of stories about what life was like when they were sharecropping, about how there was 9 of them. There was 3 girls and 6 boys, and the 3 girls were the oldest, and she was the youngest of the 3 girls. And about how when they were coming up, they didn't ever stay in the same house, because there were so many kids in such limited space. The kids would go off to different people. Like she stayed with her grandmother, who they called Big Mama. Her name was Zula Alexander.
Okay.
She stayed with Big Mama, and her sister stayed. One of her sisters stayed with her Aunt Lizzie, and then another sister stayed with another aunt. And then one of the brothers would stay with their people. So pretty much their parents raised them, but it was like on a limited basis, because they were in the fields all day. And so she would be with Big Mama all day cooking food for them while they were out in the field. So she saw her parents every day, but it was like she didn't stay with them. And it got to a point in place where when she got older and it was time for her to move back with her parents, she didn't want to go. Because she was like, I've been with Big Mama all this time. Now I'm 11 years old and you want me to go live with y'all? She said, I love my parents, but obviously she used to live with Big Mama.
Yeah.
You know, cause she was telling me stories about how her and Big Mama would share, her, Big Mama, and her grandpa we'll all share this one bed and this quilt, just especially in the wintertime to keep warm and stuff like that. But she said it was some good days though, because she was like, you know, in this area, she said, you know, you experienced a lot of hostility from whites, but not like you did in other areas. Because she said that the poor whites were just like them, and they would share stuff with each other. They would eat with each other and cook for each other. And the poor white kids, you know, sometimes they would say little things, but they would be friends like real quick, like the next day. So, on my dad's side, they grew up, on 115 in Mooresville, near what's called Kerrigan Farms.
Yeah.
I've heard some pretty rough stories about there. In particular, I have an aunt who the white man they were working for, and one day he tried to sexually assault her. And my grandfather found out about it, and he actually stood up, and this was in the late 50s, to him, and told him, do not touch my daughter. You know, if you do, you will have trouble. And so they burned the cross on the yard 2 nights later. And my grandpa said that he stood there, my dad said he stood there and watched his grandpa, a man named Bill Cowan, dark-skinned man with blue eyes, that always stuck out to me, dark-skinned man with blue eyes. He said he stood there and watched them burn their cross and did not flinch, him, his sons, and his brothers. And that sent the message to the white men, don't mess with our family. And they never did again. Like, the fact they just stood there and watched them light the cross on and did not say nothing to them, they just stood there with... According to my daddy, they had guns, so that also was a big issue too, a big deal too. But that always stands out to me. This was the late 50s, and people were being killed and all that for stuff that my great grandfather did and got away with.
Yeah,
you know. But it was, according to them, it was rough, but it was not as rough as it was in other places. You had to work hard. Church was a big part of everything. They sung morning, noon, and night. My family is a singing family. That helped pass the time away. They made up songs, blues songs, gospel songs, spirituals, anything to help pass the time away. And she was like, it was just annoying. She said they had a good childhood, but she said at the same time, they could tell that it was different for white kids than it was for them. And, you know, when the things they heard and the things that people said to them, it made them feel like they were less than. But she said that her mama and her father, her mother's name was Lily Wright, or Lily Ada Lavinia.
Oh, wow.
Carson Rice. I know, right? She said that they pretty much made sure that they always knew that they were loved and they would be taken care of, and that they were never below anyone. Mm-hmm. Pretty much it's kind of like what Michelle Obama said: when they go low, we go high. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much how their philosophy was. If they come against you, go over them.
Mm-hmm. Now, did they live more in the country since their Vicarian Farms was a town necessarily?
They lived. What's the name of that road? Oh God, it's right here in Davidson. It's not too far from Beaver Dam Plantation. The Beaver Dam Plantation House.
Rocky River?
Yes, sure. Down the area.
Okay.
Yeah, down on the area. They lived right down there. And for them, she said they were good times because they were out in the open. But she remembered little things like her and her sister hated getting up in the morning to go milk the cow. She said the worst part about it was they had to go find the cow.
Oh. Because
they didn't have a fence. And so the cow would wander off. And they would hear it, but they would have to go get up at 5 o'clock in the morning in the dark and looking for a cow. And they were terrified of what they call a May dog. It's what we call a mad dog.
Oh, but they
they were like, the May dog may get us. I was like, what is a May dog? They was like, the May dog. My mama was like, she's talking about a mad dog. Oh, it's just called a May dog. But they were talking about dogs with rabies, foaming at the mouth. Mm. But yeah, they lived out in the country. And it was, I remember my uncle telling me one of the biggest memories he had was of them getting up in the morning, eating beans and cornbread, and still being hungry, and driving past a man who owned the farm, white man who owned the farm, they could smell his breakfast in there. Mm. They said they could smell his ham and his coffee and stuff. And they were like, here they are going to pick his cotton, and he's eating off of them. He was like, that was probably for him one of, that was my grandmother's brother, my uncle Larry. He was like, to him, that was probably one of the biggest acts of the biggest moments. That was one moment where he started realizing what injustice was. Mm. We're picking the cotton and giving you the money, and you're eating good, and we're sitting here as kids, 6, 7 years old, our stomachs are empty, and our parents can't even afford to, you know, keep all of us together right now. So,
when did your family move off, or all towns move to them, or they move? So, what did your parents end up growing up to do?
My mother is my mother. She does their home care for elderly patients, and my father works at Freightliner trucking company. They pretty much grew up inside Mooresville because both their parents left the country, or the countryside, and moved into Mooresville to work at Burlington Mills and Draymore Mills in Mooresville. And so they pretty much were raised in the city, but pretty much like me and my brothers and my cousins in the 90s, they went back and forth between the country and the city. Mm-hmm. Like, we would spend our weekends in the country, and then we would spend the weekdays in the city with school.
Going to school, working, and
getting all that set up. And I think that, you know, my mama, she worked at Walmart for 25 years, but she got fed up of that. I see, like, the way they treated people there. And so she moved into doing direct care. But even that, she finds to be a hassle because she feels like at times it's just modern-day Jim Crow things involved. Because the people will have them come in and they'll say, Kathy, we just need you to get her meds and give the patient her meds and help her bathe. But by the time all is said and done, they expect her to cook dinner, to clean the house and run errands. And she's like, well, this is not what we signed up to do. But because she loves what she does, you know, she does. But at the same time, she's like, she feels like people are trying to get over on her and have her do more, be essentially a maid rather than an in-home caregiver. And so it's a slippery slope back into those days. But
yeah, it is. And when you're dealing with an older person or someone who's ill, it's a little hard to say.
Yeah, no. Because they still refer to her as colored. Yeah. Or a Negro, and it's like, it's not from a place of hatred. It's just that's just how they knew black people as the color or Negro. And they're some of the sweetest people, but you can tell they grew up in that time period just by the interaction with black people.
Yeah, what they say. Yeah, it's frustrating and hard. So how did you decide to go to college? And
after everybody stopped sharecropping, everybody went to the factories in the 80s and the 90s. And everybody in Mooresville worked either at Freightliner or Burlington Factory before it closed down. And I was like, this isn't the life for me. Because as a kid, and as an adult as well, so I'm ADD. And so it took me a long time to find stuff that I actually wanted to do in school. But when I finally connected to history, it's like I took off in third grade, me and history just. Mm-hmm. And because I loved history so much, my other subjects started to flourish too. Because I was like, well, I like history. Let me see what I can like about math. I hate math. Let me see what I can find out I like about reading. And reading definitely took off. And so I said, well, I like going to school, so I might as well go and go to college. And plus, it was the added benefit. Well, no one else has done it. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of the people that like to take risks. You tell me I can't do it, I'm going to do it. Because I actually had a teacher in eighth grade tell me I would never go to college. Because I was filling out forms for our high school classes in eighth grade. And one of the classes I chose was a college prep class. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I don't think you really need that class. I said, well, I want to go to college. She said, well, you don't strike me as college material. I know, right? And it was like when she said that, it set something off inside of me. I said, okay, I'm going to prove you wrong. And so far, my graduating class, I pretty much picked up more degrees than any graduate member of my graduating class. I've gone further than almost any member of my graduating class. And I think that's, to me, that's something. That was a huge inducement to go to college. Not only to prove people wrong, but just to prove myself what I could do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to high school where most of us were expected, but it was still, this was in the 70s, mm-hmm. You were tracked. So some people went voc ed, you know, it's like, you know, you're going to go to business classes, and others were. But yeah, my oldest sister was the first actually to, well, I have a grandmother who went to college, but then, particularly on my father's side, we're the first group to have gone through. So yeah, it's an interesting feeling realize that.
It's an interesting feeling, because when you realize that, you're like, wow, I did this. You're thinking, well, I'm just doing something I was already going to do, but it's like it's such a significant thing.
Yeah. Have you gone back into high school reunions? And
I have not. Because
I was one.
When we had our 10th high school reunion in 2004, I was actually in Atlanta. I just started my master's program and I couldn't make it back. Yeah. And I was like, man, I hate it because I really wanted to go back and just see how everybody was doing besides what they put on Facebook.
Yeah. And to show off. It's like, I got this degree. Yeah. I did it too.
Pretty much that too. I can't lie.
So what have you seen since you've been able to, you were here, and then everything, you went off to school and been doing other things, and you've come back. When you look at Mooresville, when you look at this area, what's the same, what's different?
What's different is just everything. Like Mooresville and Davidson and Caneas have just exploded. Like areas now where you see all these people living, when I grew up, it was nothing but fields. Yeah. I still remember when there were cotton fields coming through what we call Mount Moore, between Davidson and Mooresville, near what used to be the Reed Plantation. They still had cotton fields growing out there when I was in elementary school.
Okay.
But now I see all these housing developments where Lowe's corporate office is. That actually used to be that was plantation land. Mm-hmm. And there used to be cotton fields out there, and it's amazing to me to see all the development that's taking place and all the people who are coming here. I meet more New Yorkers than I meet more native North Carolinians.
New Yorker in Ohio.
Yes. New York, Ohio, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Everyone I meet in Mooresville is like, well, I'm not from here. I'm like, I can tell. Yeah. If you're from Mooresville, we have a distinctive accent. Back here in the backcountry, we have a distinctive accent. I can tell who is and who's not. But it's one of those things where looking at everything that's changed, just seeing how Mooresville has grown and expanded and grown over itself, and looking at how Davidson has just exploded. Cornelius, where Cash's gas station is in Cornelius, that was the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
There was nothing else in Cornelius. Where McDonald's is in Cornelius right now, that was the end of it. Like where Torrance Chapel is, that was like the end of Cornelius.
Yeah.
Mooresville ended where Walmart is now and Wendy's is, that was the end of Mooresville. Now it's all the way up going towards the lake. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to see how the people who are moving in here, how they're changing the way in which this area, you know, is viewed as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, we're becoming more progressive in this area, interesting enough. You still have a strong element of the old South. Don't get me wrong. That's one of the things that does not change. She still got those manners. She still got people who you know, I guess you call them those Sunday porch type people. Oh. You know, I guess driving Miss Daisy type people. Yeah. You know, you still have those people who live in this area. But for the most part, it's such a diverse mixture now that it's like you get both the best of the South, but also a unique taste of the North, too. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, North Carolina is becoming so much more progressive. Mm-hmm. You know, people are talking about this election, it's a toss up between Trump and Clinton. It is what it is. But North Carolina has become so much more progressive, and it's such a beautiful thing because I really love living in this state. Mm-hmm. There's no other place I would want to live, I mean, besides maybe Georgia. But North Carolina is such a wonderful place to live, and it's like just seeing the way Mooresville is changing and adapting to it, and seeing Davidson grow and adapt to it, it's like, wow, this is all taking place before my eyes. Things I never would have thought to see as a kid happening in Mooresville are taking place in Mooresville. You know, I think just a testament to that is the protests on Friday. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people who were involved in them, people from out of state apparently, mm-hmm. who were wanted, you know.
This is the one in Mooresville?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
The one on Friday, it was led by a young lady named Renisha Caldwell, who I know she's from Mooresville.
Okay.
But there was a heavy element of people from out of town, both black, white, Latino, Asian, and they were like, you know, we want to be a part of this, and we had put our voices in what's going on. Whereas in more so in the '90s, you would not have seen that.
No.
More so in the '90s, we were still having Klan marches. Mm-hmm. The Klan was still parading downtown more so when I was in elementary school in the '90s, and it was just, I remember seeing it to this day.
Do you? Mm-hmm. We had one in Davidson that I know of in 1986. They mm-hmm. got a permit, and the college students did a festival on the court, the fraternity court, and most people in town were there, and there was hardly anybody. But tell me about the Klan in Morrisville. And
they didn't march in the streets. Mm-hmm. They marched downtown on the sidewalks. And it was just more so, I want to say it had something to do with the Rodney King, mm-hmm. everything was going on with Rodney King at that time. But if I remember just walking through downtown with my grandmama, and we was coming out of, I want to say, D.H. Turner Hardware Store. Okay. It's an old hardware store in Morrisville.
Still there.
Yeah, still there. Was coming out of there for something. I remember just seeing, it was like five of them walking down the street from that side. And I look on the other side, and there were three or four other rogue men coming down the other side of the street. And it was just so interesting. I was like, Grandma, what is that? She's like, well, come on here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But she was scared.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cause I never knew why she was so what like it was like it was more so anger than fear. Uh-huh. It was like, come on here, we gotta go, and I never saw my grandma get like that before, mm-hmm. agitate like that. So we got in the car, and I remember just wondering. I kind of knew who they were, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I knew they were bad people, but I didn't know. I knew they didn't like black people, but I didn't know fully everything about them until later on. And I knew not to. Back then, kids knew not to ask questions, mm-hmm. cause you either get sent outside or worse. That's grown folks' business. But being the type of kid I was, I picked up on stuff very quickly. And I remember it was such an awkward experience. I remember just standing there like, my biggest question was, why do they have the hoods on? Why do their hoods look like that? You know, just asking a normal kid question to myself. Also, it was like, it was scary because, I mean, all this, their clothing and stuff, and they have on these hoods and stuff. And it was just, it seemed like they were just doing it as an intimidation thing, just because they could. Because they knew in Morrisville at that time period, you could get away with stuff like that back here. But nowadays they can't. Mm-hmm. But back then they knew they could pull that off and get away from it. I remember just thinking to myself, wow. Even looking back at that right now, it's like, wow, this town has come a long, long, long way. But it was a mixture of fear and just curiosity that day.
Yeah, it must have been hard though to be able to go home and not ask, and then not know until later when you were reading something, and it's like, that's who those people were. That's,
yeah. Come on, I first read, when I was in fourth grade, and we was doing North Carolina history, and we was talking about Reconstruction, and we was talking about the actual Klan and how they found out. I was like, that's those people. Those people that was on the street that day.
Yeah, wish we could have left them in the 19th century.
Yeah.
So what else would you want someone to know about the history of this area?
I think one of the unique things about the history of this area, especially for African Americans, is that it's actually a little bit on the easier side to do your family tree in this area. And I know it's like a random fact, but the unique thing about this area, slavery-wise, was you had several plantations that sat in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And the slaves, after they were freed, took the names of those plantation owners. And you still see those names here in Davidson and Morrisville and Cornelius.
Yeah.
Like Reed. They owned the big plantation in Mount Moore, where Mount Moore gets its name from. The Woodlawn Plantation, where the school is. That was the Stinson family. There are hundreds of Stinsons in Davidson. The Houston family, they own the Gray Plantation. That's a bed and breakfast now. There's a lot of Houstons here. Miss Ruby Houston, she goes to
Davidson Presbyterian Church.
Her family, like all those are the Stinson from... Cedar Grove in Huntersville, huge brick plantation, built by this man named James Torrance. I know about that one because that's where my people come from.
Okay,
so on my dad's side
as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Dad's side, okay.
Where Torrance is, and then there was a plantation called Alexandriana.
Mm-hmm.
There's a road down in Charlotte named with the name Alexandriana. It was connected to the Revolutionary War. That's where my mom's side comes from.
Okay.
Alexandriana Plantation, the Alexanders. You still see a lot of them up and down this area too.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that, you know, if I would tell anyone, especially if you're African American or if you're white, regardless, and you're from this area, it is very easy to look up your family tree. Because when you start putting those pieces together and you start seeing how interconnected we are here in Davidson, because everybody's kin to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I might have a little bit of your blood, you might have a little bit of my blood, white and black. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's one of those things where I would encourage anyone, do your family tree. look it up, you know, see who you, where you come from. Because when you know where you come from, it helps give you a better footing going forward in life. Because, you know, I'm proud to say that maybe somebody look back and say, well, Shane went to college back in 2004, and he was my great-great-grandfather, so maybe I should go to college. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just, you'll be surprised what you will find. But other than that, I'd say this is a very good area to live in. Very, very family-oriented. The people are full of love. Mm-hmm. And I think it's shown in so many different ways that I never would expect it to see. Like, when they passed the North Carolina LGBT bill, mm-hmm. you know, this being an area of Black Christian evangelism, mm-hmm. like, oh, they probably gonna be in support of it. Mm-hmm. No, they were like, people are people, and we love all people regardless of whether they're straight or gay or Black or white. And you know, even our church here, they're like, yeah, we love all people. You know what I'm saying? It's not about who you. It's not about how you identify. It's just about you being a person that God breathed life into. So I would say anyone who's listening, you know, that's one thing about this area. It's an area full of love. It's an area full of fiery people mm-hmm. who will let you know about yourself too. But it is an area full of love, and it's good to be a part of this community in particular.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of things that have intrigued me as I've learned about the area, I've been here since 94, is that, like with Davis and Cornelius, the white communities, you can tell a lot of tension between the college and blue collar, but the Black, the families cross the line, and mm-hmm. you don't see the same kind of tensions between African Americans and the cities. They don't mm-hmm. identify with the blue collar, white collar, college kind of thing. That just doesn't happen that way. I think real quick, because there was another thing as you were talking about. One also is how like the lake affected things.
Oh,
you know, it was here in 63, but it's not. It was after 85 that people started seeing the lake, mm-hmm. In part because apparently in Charlotte they started hiring bankers who came from the Northeast, and there's a lake out there. You know, there was a late shift in bringing more people in and sort of changing that.
In Mooresville, like for instance, Mooresville used to be 28115. Now you have 28117, and there is conflict in Mooresville between 28117 and 28115.
The zip code
is like 28115. That's what they call Old Mooresville. Mm-hmm. That's where you find a lot of the old money, and that's where you find a lot of people who live in Mooresville their whole entire lives. Well, everybody who's moving into Mooresville from other places live in 28117. So you get two different fields. Mm-hmm. You know, people know where they split apart at. Highway 21 is where 28115 becomes 28117. It's like they call it the Lake District. Mm-hmm. But it had such a huge, because Mooresville was like, only had like 9,000 people in 1990. Now we're up near like 45,000 people in 2016. And it's still growing.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how the lake has affected that town in particular. It's just, everyone wants to live on the lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Davidson, is their phone exchange. If you're old Davidson, you're an 892 number.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else is.
Yeah.
Cell phones are messing that up. But that used to be the 892. I know the other thing I was going to think, the thing that's also struck me about this is that this area has not had a lot of civil rights activities. There weren't a lot of local leaders who stood up. Now, in Davidson, it makes some sense because most people worked for the college and they were in genuine fear that if they did something, not only could they lose their job, and entire families could be affected. And, you know, I don't know if the college would have, but that was clearly the perception at the time. But that has also struck me that in some ways, there's never been a whole lot of outward protest. And I don't know if that's made it easier over time for people to shift because there aren't angry memories that are holding on, or if sometimes the fact we haven't made as much progress as we could because the community has been held back. Everybody's done that way too polite, no harm, no foul kind of behavior.
And I think that's part of it, because one thing about this area, if you look up from Monroe all the way up to Statesville, because we're kind of tucked away in the western part of the state, mm-hmm. people didn't pay a lot of attention to what took place in this area. And so it was very dangerous to be a Black person living in Mooresville or Davidson, because, you know, the white community may have issues with one another, but if they see a Black person stepping out of line, they're going to come together at that moment back in those days, and they're going to put that person, quote unquote, in their place. Because you still have lynching trees in places like Mooresville and Salisbury. Salisbury's lynching tree is still definitely standing. But it was very violent back then.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where Mooresville's tree was?
Mooresville's tree apparently was on, I believe, near Highway 21.
Okay.
Not too far from where I live. Mm. And apparently there was one also going towards, between Mooresville and Salisbury on, I want to say Highway 115, maybe. It may be 115 or 801. I can't remember which one it is. Yeah. Between one's one,
one 115 runs parallel with one, with 21, but 151 runs east south. So 115 is a north south road. With 21, and I think 151 is an east.
I can't remember.
150. I'm not good at road numbers.
I can't. I know it's one something.
Yeah.
But it's the road that runs in front of Kerrigan Farms.
Okay. Yeah.
It goes through a little area called Bear Poplar. Mm-hmm. There was several historic lynchings that took place there. One involved black people actually lynching a black person. These black men hung a black man back in the 70s because he killed another black man, and then white people weren't gonna do nothing about it, so they said, "Well, we must take the law in our own hands." But that's another interesting story you might want to hear about. I'm actually a descendant from a lynching victim. Two of them, actually. In 1901 or 1903, this lady named Cornelia Benson was found dead, lying face down in a creek in Salisbury. This lady wrote a book about it. That's where I know the story from. They blamed her neighbors, these two young black boys, aged 11 and 13, named Harrison and James Gillespie. And so they put them in jail, and they went and they took them out of jail late one night, and they wanted to lynch them. And usually when they lynch someone, they would torture them beforehand, but because they were kids, I guess they would call themselves being humane, maybe. So they marched the two boys to the lynching tree, and the older one, the 13-year-old, they said by the time they got him there, he was nearly dead from fright. Mm-hmm. So they just hung him, and they got it over with. But the younger one, they could tell he was a little bit more plucky. So they tied a rope around his neck, and they made him climb up the tree himself. And they said that as he was climbing, they heard him singing this song. It's an old spiritual called I want to go to heaven when I die. Lord have mercy on my soul. I want to go to heaven when I die. Something like that. And he got to the top, and they told him to jump, and he said no. And so they said, either you jump or we're going to make you jump. He said no. So they shot at him until he actually lost his footing and actually fell to his death. Wrap around his neck. I'm gonna say, cause their grandfather and my grandfather's grandmother, I want to say this, were brother and sister.
Okay.
Interesting enough. Mm-hmm. And so it was. I found out about that in 2013, and it's haunted me ever since. Mm-hmm. And I asked some of my older family members about it. And they say, yeah, we knew about it. We just don't talk about it. It's just one of those things that, you know, it's still even here in 2013. Then. That was some over 100 something years removed, but it's still something that's hard to talk about. You know, this actually took place and happened in our family. That's two members of our family were lynched. You know, people didn't talk about it. They knew about it. They made mention to it when it was needed, but for the most part, no one talked about it.
Yeah.
So it's one of those, and this took place in Salisbury.
Mm-hmm. So have you winnowed any other stories out of them? Because, you know, when we lose that generation, mm-hmm. the people who knew but didn't want to talk about it, I think the ways that they told the stories before working, you know, I think when you were working in the fields, when you were doing some stuff, some of those stories got told in ways that now they don't sit to grandson down and say, I want to tell you these stories. That, so
as I've gotten older, because they're always younger, like I was saying earlier, I like to ask questions. Yeah. And they're always, oh, grown, so that's grown folk business. That's grown folk business. You don't even know about that. That's just go play. But as I got older, they started seeing how persistent I was in asking about these things. They started letting me know little more and more things about where the white blood comes from in our family. Mm-hmm. How we had, we're descended from what they call I forgot what you call it, but it's where you have a white man who has a white family on one side of town and a black family on the other side of town. My great grandmother, my daddy's grandmother, Mama Emma, she was descended from, I think it was her mother was a result of a relationship like that. Mm-hmm. This is in the Torrance family. Yeah, it was just one of those things where he had his white family who everyone knew about, but then on the other side of the tracks, he had his black family. And so it was like, mm-hmm. And he took care of both families, apparently. And they were very proud of their white blood, to where my great-grandmother told me a story about how when she was going to marry my great-grandfather, my great-grandmother is probably about the color of your hat, mm-hmm. before she passed away. She's about Miss Maggie's color, complexion. Right. Looked like a full-blooded Native American woman. Mm-hmm. Whereas my great-grandfather, when I was telling you, with dark skin, mm-hmm. blue eyes,
yeah.
her family didn't want him to marry her. But they want her to marry him because he was too dark. And they were like, if you marry him, you're going to disgrace the family. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, well, I love him. So she married him. And they had kids who were like brown skin. And they caught hell. My grandmother tell me stories about how her light-skinned grandmother didn't like them because they were too dark. Mm-hmm. She always favored the other kids because they were lighter and closer to white. And she would blame them for little things to get them in trouble. And she asked her mom, she said, why do you let grandma treat us like that? She said, oh, that's just how your grandma was raised. And it was just one of, and this was back in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things where You find when you ask them questions, I realize now a lot of stuff was painful for them. Yeah. It's not just they didn't want to talk about it. It's just that stuff was painful for them to experience. Mm-hmm. You know, just to see, you know, hey, my grandmother's light skinned, doesn't love me because I'm dark skinned. Or, you know, my family's going to tell me I can't marry somebody because they're too dark. Or so-and-so tried, almost got raped. You know, one of the sisters, my grandmother's sister, she was a very light-skinned woman with long hair. These five white men from South Carolina came and kidnapped her one night, gang-raped her, and took a beer bottle and cut all her hair off with it. And see, stuff like that, it's like those stories, you can tell why they're so painful. This took place in Mooresville. And so it's like, you can tell why it took them a long time to answer these questions, but it's starting to come out more and more, and especially with a lot of them, you know, passing away and getting older, and the memories not what it used to be. We're trying to get as many stories right now as we can in the family, me and some of my cousins, just to have a solid understanding of where we come from and what life was like for them, and why they act the way they act, because they are tough people.
Yeah.
And they take no mess from nobody. But I see now why, because it had to be like that growing up in Jim Crow, North Carolina.
Yeah, it's fabulous that you guys are doing that, because it's painful as it is. We need to know that. And for all the people who can't understand what's going on in Charlotte now, sometimes hearing those stories, understanding what people have gone through, helps them understand what's going on now and why people, it's like, it's all over again. It's, you know, when a builder was like, well, none of this happens. It's like, it does happen. It did happen. And we carry that in our bodies. And so I'm glad that you guys are doing it. I know it's not easy, and it can't be easy to hear it.
Oh, no, it's not easy, especially when it's...
But to lose that, to lose...
Not at all.
You know, to honor the strength that they... What they did.
It tells me why they have such strong faith. Because that's all they had was faith in each other. Because Lord knows that's what... As my grandma said, that's what carried them through. Was their faith in God, and their faith in each other, and their love for God, and their love for each other. Because, you know, somebody might not have flour one day, and somebody might not have sugar one day. If you got flour and I got sugar, and I'm going to give you some of my flour, you give me some of your sugar, and we'll make it till tomorrow. And if we run out tomorrow, we'll go find somebody else. I'm sure somebody else will bring more flour and sugar. It was one of those things where the community was huge. You know, it wasn't about the individual. The individual had room for themselves in their own way, but it was more about the community, taking care of everybody. Well, your daddy's sick, and I know you're going to go to the field today. Well, I'm working in the house today, so I'm going to check on your daddy while you're out in the fields. And then when I'm out in the fields, and I got my children at home, and you're working in the house, I'm going to check on my children. It's one of those things where everybody played off each other. It wasn't just about, oh, I'm a steward, and you're a Cowan, or you're Alexander. We were all in this together.
What is it like in this generation where you don't live near each other anymore? I don't know how often you see your cousins, but that's, you have to have different kinds of community. Now, this everybody's scattered, you go off to college, you work someplace else, you come back. How often do you see cousins? How does your family work?
All my cousins, we live within 30 minutes of each other. But we still don't see each other as much as we should. I may see them maybe twice, maybe two or three times a month. Just because we're all busy and doing our own things. And I think with the whole thing about social media now, we feel like, well, since we're on social media, we want to have that physical contact. But I do miss it, because we're trying to plan a family reunion just so we can... Because family reunions are now starting to go out of style, I guess. We used to have huge family reunions, but now you're seeing the older generation who used to put these together are now dying out or getting older. And so it's like the younger generation, like, well, we don't really want to do it anymore. But I feel like, you know, as time goes by, those who are in their 40s and 50s right now, who are about to become the older generation, who are about their 40s, 50s, and 60s, now they're about to become the elderly generation. I can see it in them. They're wanting to start it back up. Because now they're starting to see, okay, now I see why mama and daddy and them were so big on us having family reunions. Because it keeps the family together. And it helps us to be connected and know who is who. This is my cousin. Well, how are you my cousin? You're my cousin because your mama and my mama are first cousins. Because you find a lot of that more. So it's like, so many people, it's like, there's so many people I grew up with who I did not know were a third or a fourth cousin. They were like, oh yeah, that's my great grandmama. How is that your great grandma? That's my great grandmama. Well, then we got the, well, her daughter is my aunt, is my mom, my grandmama. Well, your grandmama is my aunt, so that makes you my cousin then. Yep. I've had conversations like that quite often at work, at school. Just, I've been finding cousins, like, over the past 30 years of my life, I have found cousins everywhere. Everywhere. Mooresville, Davidson, Kannapolis, Concord, Statesville. It's just, it's amazing. And that's why we're trying to keep the family line, you know, keep the communication in regards to the family history open, so we'll know who is who and why we do certain things and why we live in certain places in Mooresville.
you.
Thank you.
Shut this off.